Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone. Welcome to People's Internet Radio. This is Graham Hart, broadcasting out of the Celtic land of Ireland and hosting from the Celtic land of Cornwall. Welcome to the show. Good evening, and brothers and sisters in the chat room. It's great to have your company. If you've got any questions for my very special guest tonight, please put them in uppercase so I can pick them out from the chat. It's Tuesday, the 4th of August, 2015, and as I say, we've got a very special guest lined up tonight. My special guest needs no introduction, but he's going to get one. Acknowledged by the best in the movement as the best in the movement, it is my great honour and pleasure to welcome back to PIR one of the greatest speakers and activists of our time, Max Egan. Good day, Max, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Graham. Pleasure to come and talk to you again, brother, and thanks for a lovely introduction.
My pleasure, my friend. It's great to talk to you. It's been a long 11 months since we've spoken, Max. I didn't think I'd be doing a radio show.
Yeah. How's life in Cornwall, brother?
It's good. I feel things are beginning to really warm up now.
Oh, that's good. That's a start. Anyway, warm up in Paris climate or warm up as far as the consciousness?
The consciousness, most definitely. I think people are beginning to really wake up to it now. The case we've got going here with Tom Crawford could be crucial. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I'm not actually. What's that one relating to?
Well, Tom Crawford had his house stolen. He took out a mortgage. The mortgage company changed it. He found out that they were still saying after he paid that he still owed £43,000. So they came and... Yeah. So they came and took his house. They came, I think, in January. A lot of people turned up, supporters of Tom, and the bailiffs went away. The same happened again later in the year. I think it was May. On July the 2nd, they came back with 150 police, 50 bailiffs, and no paperwork. Helicopters overhead. They took the property and just pushed people out. It's utterly incredible. And there's a lot of people behind Tom now. I know there's 4,000 followers on Facebook. And I put out there a couple of weeks ago that I think maybe now, sooner or later, Max, I think we're going to have to make a move and start challenging these people by just turning up and saying enough is enough.
Well, yeah, it's got to come to that. It really does. I mean, here you've got the police there supporting the corporate theft of someone's house, really. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're discarding the population in order to balance the books. This is what I keep telling people. That's what it's all about. It's such a psychopathic system. It's ridiculous. You know, it doesn't service humankind's needs at all. And that's a perfect example of it. Mm. So yeah, that's what we need to do. They just need to start showing up and saying, we've had enough of this. This is all an abusive office and we want to deal with it. We want this dealt with. We want a system that's going to support the people, not one that's going to, you know, support the economic model over the needs of the people. It's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. And I think they've showed that now, Max. Following on from that, last Sunday, six people decided they would take the house back and storm the house and got up on the roof and stayed up on the roof for 2 days. So that caused a hell of a panic. And we're still waiting to see the paperwork. Apparently, what's known as the unicorn, because it's myth, there is no warrant. We're still waiting to see the warrant. There's no way they're going to be able to show one, certainly one that's in order. So I think Tom now is going to take this case. It'll keep running through to the court, Max, but I wonder how much longer we can keep playing with the system because they're just dragging it out and dragging it out. And I put out there a couple of weeks ago that I think it's time that if Tom now called the people and said, we're going to meet up on Sunday and we're taking the house back, I think thousands would turn up and they would go and march on the house and not leave until the house is given back. There's enough people now to do that. And if Tom calls that, people would fly in from Ireland.
Well, that's what they should do. They should do something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous because all the paperwork they're tying up and all this red tape for months and months. Meanwhile, this guy's out in the cold. He's out of his house. It's ridiculous, you know. And, you know, the mistake has been obviously with the banks. It always is. Let's get realistic about it. The fact anybody's in a state of financial hardship is because of the banks. That's the bottom line. So yeah, you should just go and take the house back, and make it as public as possible. You know.
Well, it's been
get everybody involved. You know.
Yeah, it's been on. It's even made local mainstream media, Max, but it's not gone any further than that. But it's just the genuine support throughout the whole of the UK or the British Isles, I should say, for Tom now, and I think we are really moving close to something happening.
Well, that's good. That's good. I hope you have every success with it, brother.
Well, it's up to Tom to call it, Max. It really is. He's carrying on down the. He's got a brilliant team behind him. So we wait to see what he does. But moving on from that, Max, your program last Saturday was very much about the media, and I would like to discuss that because they are complicit in everything that they do, and I don't think we're hammering them enough.
Well, yeah, you know, like really all of the crimes that we're seeing, all the war crimes, everything that's happening in the whole state of the world, the media is complicit in selling all this to the public. I mean, look at the Iraq War as a perfect example. The whole Iraq War was based on a lie from the ground up, right since its inception. All these whole ideas of them, you know, shipping in uranium and all this stuff that was cooked up. We knew back then, the alternative media was talking about it. We all knew that all of this was fabricated, and we had the evidence to show that it was fabricated. Why wasn't the media reporting that? Why did they sell the lie to the world? You know, the thing is that what the media is doing, modern Western media, is basically indulging in war propaganda. That's what they're doing. They're selling this whole war on terror. They're selling all these invasions. They're selling sending all these troops to Syria and all the rubbish that they're doing. And this is war propaganda. And without war propaganda, all of the war crimes that you see during wartime couldn't happen. You couldn't have genocide. You couldn't have ethnic cleansing. You couldn't have the ethnic cleansing that's going on in Palestine right now that the Israelis are carrying out if it wasn't for the media supporting this by whitewashing over the whole thing. And by presenting a very, very biased viewpoint to the world of what's actually going on. That's the same in Syria. It's the same in Iraq. All of the things they've done, they haven't presented any of the facts to the people. Look at 9/11. For God's sake, what did they present? The BBC said that Building 7 had collapsed 20 minutes before it had. So they obviously knew that it was going to collapse. And then they cut all this stuff out about all bombs going off and the firefighters saying we've got to get out of the way because the building's coming down and all this sort of stuff. They cut all of this stuff out of the news. And just the fact that, I mean, this is propaganda by omission. They're putting out stuff that the public needs to know and stuff that needs to be investigated, and they didn't investigate any of it. And we don't see the media investigating anything anymore, which is what it used to be. You used to have reporters going out handing stories and finding things and reporting it in the paper. It'd be breaking news about some terrible thing that was going on. The police would get wind of it and go and investigate it. And now the media isn't allowed to investigate anything. They're only fed what the police tell them. So the police and government can cook up any scenario they want, and the media just feeds it to the public, and it's nothing more than propaganda. And they are wholly responsible for the war on terror being promoted to the public and being sold to the public. They're responsible for this whole mess continuing. You know, if they reported the facts and held government accountable, which is what their job is. You know, we need a media that holds government accountable. The media is the only organization that's actually mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. You know, the actual U.S. Constitution mentions the media as being absolutely, absolutely essential to have a strong and transparent government, because without a media holding government accountable, you can have no government accountability. And that's the problem. Our media does not hold government accountable. There's legislation put in place that prevents them from holding government accountable, and they don't even report on that, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I was in the media and I was given legislation that told me I had to shut my mouth, I'd do a full-page spread on that just to let everybody know that the government is telling me I can't report what these criminals are doing. You know, it's ridiculous. These guys need to grow some balls and stand up and speak the truth, because they're complicit in war crimes as much as the government is.
Absolutely.
You know, and even worse.
Yep.
Because the government, we know these guys are bought and paid for before they get to office, but the media has the opportunity to get up there and tell the truth, and they don't. And it's disgraceful.
Well, I think I agree with you that they are complicit, and they're just stars, if you like, except for, you know, Jon Snow spoke out last year. The anchorman on Channel 4 spoke out. But none of the...
He's about the only real media personality you have in England at the moment. I mean, there's only really Jon Snow and John Pilger are the only two real journalists left in the whole mainstream, I think.
Yeah, in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty well, anywhere in the world. I'm not seeing any truth out of any of these people. I see half-truths.
Yeah.
I see people pretending to tell the truth and giving you a little bit of the information, but not going the whole way and not really calling things what they are.
No, they're household names, Max. John Simpson, Orla Gearing, all these people, they're on the ground, and they've been on the ground in Palestine. They know damn well what's going down, and yet they're not reporting on it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're all giving a really, really biased perspective, and it's disgraceful, and it's supporting the crimes.
Yeah.
It's allowing crimes to be perpetuated, and it's just not on. You know, people are dying. You know, the average age in Palestine in Gaza Strip is 17. That is the average age of the people. All 1.8 million people, that's the average age.
It's incredible.
So, yeah. There's so many children in Gaza Strip, man. And when they have a war against Gaza, it's a war against children. And it's not presented that way to the Western world in the media. It's presented as Israel going in and carrying out strikes against terrorist targets. and that's not what it is, and no, it's disgraceful.
Well, as Bill Hicks said, and you've repeated yourself, Max, it takes two armies to have a war.
Yeah, it does. It takes.
There's no army. They got rocks and a few AKGs.
Exactly. So, you know, I did a show about that because I thought it was necessary. I was angry. I'm angry at seeing what's going down in Yemen. I'm angry at seeing what's going down in Gaza and Syria and Iraq and everywhere. It's disgraceful.
Well, you know,
just presenting the facts to the people, you know.
Absolutely. You know more about the Middle East, Max, than anyone else I know. Perhaps you could give us your views and give us the rundown on what's going down in Yemen at the moment.
Well, the people are being obliterated by Saudi Arabia, which is a horribly repressive regime. You know, in between beheadings, of course, they're over there decimating the population of Yemen. There's 6 million people that are facing starvation at the moment. There's 16 million people without water. And they're saying they're doing all this to free the country from Iranian-backed Houthi rebels, which is a complete crock. They're not doing anything like that. There was going to be a unity government installed in Yemen, and it was going to be an open democracy. And they were freaked out at that because they were going to lose control of their puppet regime in Yemen, and thereby they might have lost control of the Straits of Aden. The Straits of Aden is integral for global shipping, you know, and you can't have a unity government, an open democracy in charge of Yemen, because they might stop letting warships and stuff through the Straits of Aden. And so they just went in and obliterated the place. That's really what it's all about. It's a vital shipping route. I mean, with all the rhetoric and all the theatre, it's a good place to put a base, and it's a vital shipping route. And they need a puppet government in charge of it. They can't have an open democracy. So they've just been, you know, bombing it and just obliterating. It's like nearly 5,000 people dead in Yemen now. It's absolutely disgraceful. They're just hitting everything, schools, hospitals, churches, you know, supermarkets, everything, just blowing up all the infrastructure and just destroying as much of the country as they can and saying this is what happens if you stand up to the West.
And this is exactly the same as what we've seen in Gaza last year in the 50-day massacre.
Yeah, and it was a massacre. It was absolutely disgraceful. And the sick part about what's going on in Gaza, Graham, is that Israel could go in and wipe out Gaza in a day if it wanted to, but it likes to keep them there, and it likes to attack them and keep them on the edge and breed terrorists. It likes suicide bombers to come out of Gaza. It likes rocket attacks to come out of Gaza because it justifies Israel's need to defend itself all the time. But Israel pushes them and pushes them and pushes them until they respond. And if they respond, then they cry victim and they go in and decimate them more and more. But they need them there. They need that little bed of terrorists in their backyard so they can cry victim to the world. They can go in and clean it up in a day if they wanted, but they don't. You know, it's sick. And they use the people to gain sympathy from the world for all of their aggression. And Israel is a wholly aggressive state. It's not a defensive state. It's not defending itself in any way. They even call their army the Israeli Defense Force. It's not. It's an army. For God's sake, it's an army. It's the Israeli military is what it is. And it's performing aggressive actions against all its neighbors. And they even use the word Israeli Defense Force to cover up all their aggression. It's unbelievable. You know, everything that government says is backwards. It's incredible. The Israeli government are the masters of doublespeak.
Well, I was quite amazed. Maybe there's a turning point there, Max, because there were actual protests over the burning of the 18-month-old child. There were protests all over Israel yesterday.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's shown a lot of the settlers up for what they are, you know. And this is they're terrorists. This is terrorist activity. It's shown Israel up for what it is. You know, the only reason they do this is because they get away with it. They've been getting away with these sorts of things for years. It's just not reported. This is just one of the reports that came out. Even with the 51-day war or 52-day war last year, they said the motivation for that was the killing of two Israeli teenagers or three Israeli teenagers. But there was no mention of the three Palestinian teenagers that were machine gunned by the Israeli Defense Force at a checkpoint the week before. Nobody even spoke about that. You know, and this happens all the time. They go and bulldoze Palestinian homes all the time. They run these people out of town all the time. They terrorize them. They kill their children. They kidnap their children. They lock them in jail for years. They do it all the time. This is just one event that happened to get out to the public. And thank God it's causing some sort of an outcry. You know, and even a lot of the Jewish people all around the world are saying, look, you know, Israel has to stop what it's doing because we're copping flak. You know, and people all around the world are copping flak because of the actions of the Israeli government. And the Israeli government is an aggressive government, and it's going to cause the implosion of the state of Israel by its own actions if it isn't checked in and reined under control. It really is. Yeah. And it's great that people are protesting about it, and it's great that there's now been documents tabled in the ICC saying that Israel could well face charges for war crimes, for what it's done in Gaza. And I really hope this gets pushed through. And public opinion should push it through, because the world is waking up now. You know, they shot themselves in the foot with that invasion last year. And, you know, they didn't succeed in gaining any ground politically or militarily. All they succeeded in doing was creating millions upon millions of Palestinian activists out of people who'd never even heard of Gaza Strip before. So they really shot themselves in the foot. And I think that the days of modern-day Israel in its current form are absolutely numbered. I don't think it's going to be able to get away with what it's doing. It's been holding the world to ransom for way too long, and I think the world's had enough.
I totally agree. Of course, all governments are complicit, Max.
Well, they are. Any government supports Israel is complicit. This is why I tell people they shouldn't pay their taxes to any government. You shouldn't be paying taxes to the British government or the American government or any government out there that supports Israel, because Israel is carrying out war crimes. And you don't even have to go into everything it's done. You don't even have to go into the use of white phosphorus and bombing ambulances and mosques and schools and targeting children and all the stuff they did in that war. You just got to look at the fact that Gaza Strip exists.
Yep.
This is collective punishment. You're 1.8 million people locked in the biggest open-air prison in the world because about 25% of them voted for an organization that the Israeli government didn't like. So the rest of them are subject to collective punishment, which is a war crime under the Fourth Geneva Convention. It's not a debatable point that Israel is carrying out war crimes. Therefore, any government that is supporting it is supporting war crimes. Therefore, if you're a British citizen, you have a moral and a legal obligation to withhold your taxes from your government, because your government is supporting a terrorist government, namely the Israeli government, in the war crimes it is carrying out against the Palestinian people. And that is a fact. And so people should stop paying taxes. The Palestinian people are providing the entire world, the entire Western world, with an opportunity to rein all of our governments in, because they are all supporting this war crime, which is a breach of their own legislation. If the people would simply wake up and see the opportunity that Palestine is giving us, we could change the world in a day ourselves.
Yeah,
you know, that's something that's enormously frustrating to me as well.
Well, I think there is actual, as you say, there is legislation in place. The International Criminal, International Criminal Act 2002. I think off the top of my head, Article 51, Article 52, that states that if you are giving money to a terrorist organization, then you are complicit in war crimes. So we have every right to stop paying our taxes, but under their own laws.
Exactly, and the new anti-terror legislation that Cameron's government brought in, his government is guilty under his own legislation, because they're funding the war crimes of Israel. You know,
yeah.
And we just don't say, oh, these aren't terrorists because they're wearing military uniform. You know, go and stand in Gaza Strip for a while and see what it's like when the IDF comes in and tell me these people aren't terrorists. Oh. Rubbish. They are. All armies are terrorists. That's all they are. Armies are government-sponsored terrorist forces that go into countries and decimate them, but we don't call them terrorists because they're wearing uniforms. But if you think they're not terrorists, go get a house in a war zone and see how it feels when a foreign government arrives. They're like terrorists. So that's what they are. War is terrorism. It's as simple as that. You know, you want international law, we only need one. It's like war illegal, and anybody who instigates war, we can take them up, put them behind him, and shoot them in the head. I'm sick of these people.
Yeah.
I really am. I'm over it. And we've got to start calling things for what they are, Graham. We really do. The world's in an absolute mess because we've got a bunch of psychopathic warmongers running this planet, and we're not allowed to call things for what they are. Well, screw these people. They're a bunch of terrorists. Benjamin Netanyahu's a terrorist, and so is David Cameron. David Cameron's laws, where he's saying, what's he saying, conspiracy theorists are worse than ISIS? He's saying critical thinking is thereby outlawed. Isn't this a hate crime against intelligence? You know, he's breaking his own laws. I'll debate David Cameron on this. He's a terrorist himself. He's going out and bombing other countries, and he's milking the wealth of the British people while he's doing it. He's introducing legislation which is creating homeless people. He's creating social terrorism in his own community by giving ridiculous powers to the police, arming the police against the public. It's ridiculous what our governments are doing.
Mm.
You know, they're building private armies against the citizens so they continue to rape the planet and milk the people of their wealth. And that describes Western governments, and it's about time people stood up and called things for what they are.
Well, I totally agree, Max. A quick question from the chat box already. Jimmy's asking, Graham, how can a fictional state be held liable for anything? It is a state which is a fiction of the human mind. Men and women are guilty of crimes in Gaza. Yeah, I agree, Jimmy, and I think we are guilty of the crimes in Gaza and over the world if we stand by and do nothing.
Exactly. That's why I've been saying we've got to start looking at this as an abuse of office. You can't take action against the state. You've got to take action against the politician who sits in the office, who signs the legislation, like little warmongering cretins like David Cameron. Mm. This little warmongering terrorist needs to be held accountable for abusing the office that he holds by giving himself powers that he has no right to have and by supporting the war crimes of Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu needs to be taken to The Hague and hung for war crimes because he's a mass murderer. Plain and simple. But, you know, this is what we've got to do. We've got to start looking at the office, the people who hold office. That's what I'm trying to do with the Full Circle Project, is direct attention to the people in office who write the legislation. Because our biggest problem is we do that. We fight fiction. And the government is a fiction. It's an entity. You can't do it. It's a cloud. You can't fight against a cloud. But somewhere within that cloud is a little turd who's sitting in a chair who wrote legislation which is creating the hardship. That's where we've got to direct our focus. And when you look at all of the problems that we face, whether it be the fracking, whether it be the wars, whether it be austerity, whether it be whatever, it doesn't matter. It's usually a result of corporations that are doing bad things, and they're allowed to do it because of legislation that some little cretin politician has put in place. So that's what we need to address, the abuse of office that has created the problem to begin with. I wholeheartedly agree that you can't fight a fiction, you can't fight a cloud, but within that cloud of people, and that's who we need to direct our attention to.
Absolutely, Max. Indoctrination via TV and education. Again, I'm noticing this a lot in the TV and mainstream now. I can watch it for like a couple of minutes, catch the main story, and then I just got to switch the bullshit off. But there seems to be a real stirring of trying to stir the cultures of different peoples or different cultures against each other in the UK. I suppose this is multiculturalism all over the world, and it's happening all over the world.
Well, yeah, that's the whole game of multiculturalism, to bring all these different communities into your community and let them have their own little community within the community, so you create this little world war within every city.
Exactly.
You know, you start bringing all these different communities. They don't integrate with the community they're coming into. You know, you get the Thai people moving to London and create the Thai sector, and the Chinese create the Chinese sector, and the British people move to Thailand and create the British Quarter, you know. So you've got all these different sections within your community, but they're all closed communities within themselves that all have their own set of moral values and all operate according to their own standards and all compete with each other. And then you just got to stir up racial tension by creating wars overseas. You can create all these different wars, pit all these different races against each other who are expected to live in harmony within your own community. It's not going to happen. Yeah, so they set all this up. So you've got these little mini world wars going in with each community all around the planet. So it's very, very difficult to unite the community. It's also very difficult to unite the community against your government, like to go for the guy in office like I was talking about, because you've got all these different factions within your community which are all quite happy to be there. You've got all these people that move there from Pakistan or whatever that get all these subsidies from the government. They don't want to go and rock the boat. They're quite happy with what they get. It's better than Pakistan. So, you know, and so all the locals think, oh, these guys are creating all the problems, so it creates all this animosity. It's not. It's been set up. It's just people. It's just people trying to get by in life. Doesn't matter what your race is. Doesn't matter where you come from. It's all irrelevant. It's just people trying to get by in life. But it's all been set up this way to create all this division and all this animosity and to prevent us from ever being able to unite our communities. So we've got to find the common ground in amongst all of this and realize that we're just all people in this together. And that if anybody in the community, regardless of race, creed or color or ethnicity or where you come from or whatever, if anybody in the community is in a state of hardship due to legislation the government's put in place, and that person, that politician, is in abuse of the office that they hold. Because government, politicians, are people that we employ to manage our infrastructure for us in a responsible manner, and they're not doing so. They're doing all sorts of stuff to milk us of our wealth, to start all these wars, to keep us distracted, keep us divided. We've just got to call it like it is. But we've got to break down the barriers between the people around us and stop judging the Pakistanis or stop judging the Chinese or whatever. These are just people trying to get by in life. Forget about whatever the government set up to make you hate these people, because ultimately they're just people. Your direction and your focus needs to go towards the government, the people who created the problem within the government. That needs to be the focus. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to promote with all this anyway.
Absolutely.
We've got to get rid of all these barriers, Graham. We really do, you know.
Yeah.
We've got to see that they're all constructs that have been put there for us. And this whole thing's a setup. You know, we've been played like a fiddle.
Yeah.
And it's been going on for centuries, you know.
Last week, Max, as I said, the Mark Salam was on my show. He'd come basically off the roof to the police station and then onto my show. And it was exciting stuff, Max, for me, because I can understand what journalism really is if you've got the opportunity to do it properly. I mean, if these people come out and tell these stories, and we were right on the cutting edge of a big story last week, and it was brilliant. And if journalists, if only they knew how exciting their job could be if they could tell the truth.
Well, yeah, they're just not allowed to, because they've got these little tags that say I belong to the Journalistic Association or Associated Press or whatever, which means I have to abide by their rules, which means I have to toe the government line. That's why the independent media has been so successful, because we don't have to do that. You know, there's nobody telling me what I can and can't say. You know, it's called free speech. Free speech is the founding cornerstone of democracy, you know, and I cannot, no matter what the government tries to do with its anti-terror laws and its laws saying conspiracy theorists is as bad as ISIS and all this sort of stuff it's trying to do to shut people like me up, I simply cannot unindoctrinate myself from the core Western values of freedom of expression, freedom of thought, and freedom of speech. And that's it. And if you're attempting to remove those core values from anything to do with my society, then you have no place in this society. And that's my argument. And they won't shut me up. No. I'll say what I think. I'll think what I say. And I don't care. I don't care what they say about it. I'll call things for what they are. And it's about time everybody did that. And that's what the journalists need to do. You know, if you're out there and you're a journalist and you're listening to this and you've got one of those little tags, go tear it up and quit the association. If you've already got a name for yourself, you've probably got a fan base anyway. Just get out there and start speaking the truth. You'll be surprised at the difference you can make.
Yeah, oh for more John Pilcher's, Max.
Yeah, John's a good
journalist.
He's
brilliant. I mean, but I've known that before. I've known John Pilcher was brilliant long before I became awake, and he was the only one who was sort of telling the truth. Mm. He's an amazing guy. I thought we might have got a breakthrough last week with the Australian in Australia, Parliament and paedophiles. The 60-minute news, Aussie news. Is this a big mainstream program, Max, in Australia?
Yeah, it's pretty mainstream, yeah.
Okay, well, they ran a program last week on Parliament and paedophiles. Of course, they talked about the dead ones, not the 76 sitting MPs that we've got at the moment that are paedophiles, according to Bill Maloney. But I thought that may have made a difference, but absolutely none at all.
Yeah, well, that'd be right. People will see it and they go, oh, isn't that terrible? And they go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Say what's on the other channel. I didn't actually get to see it because I'm in Peru.
Right.
But I'm sure someone will have it. I'll check it out when I get home.
Yeah, it's online. I'll send you the links later on. Where was I going? Yes. When we march, Max, I mean, like last year, there was a massive march for, as you say, it created a lot of the 50-day war or 52-day war, as you say, created a lot of activists and supporters of Palestine. 150,000 people, I think it was 100,000 people marched one weekend through London, and the following week it was 150,000. I got a feeling, Max, that we're marching to the wrong places. I think instead of marching to Parliament, we should be marching to the news outlets. I think we should be going to Canary Wharf. I think we should be going to Sky, BBC and ITV and surrounding that place with those 50,000 here and there and saying, we're not letting you out until you tell the bloody truth.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be good. But there was 10,000 people marching out the front of the BBC during that, and the BBC didn't even report it.
It's insane.
And they were out the front of the BBC building, 10,000 people, and it didn't even make the news. BBC just reported a lovely day in London, nothing special happening. So, you know, what are you going to do? Again, I mean, it's war propaganda. Yeah. The whole thing is war propaganda. You know, the marches are good for showing solidarity because you see that there's a lot of people who think the way you do. But unfortunately, people go to these marches, they march and they think, well, okay, I've gone and participated in the march, I've made a difference. But they haven't, because they just go home and everything stays the same. You've got to push it through. You've got to start looking at what you've got. You've got an opportunity here. You've got these 150,000 people here. You could speak to all of them now, and you could address the abusive office, which is allowing the perpetuation of this war crime, and how this government is funding this war crime, and how we need to address this. And if the government isn't willing to address it, then we need to take the necessary steps to express a loss of confidence in this government's ability to govern, and then take the necessary steps to have them not only dismissed, but held accountable for perpetuating and supporting this war crime. That's the way it needs to go. And you need to start moving that action forward. Get a barrister or someone involved, someone who's honest, who's going to do it and not charge you a fortune and actually do it because they're a human being and they can make a difference. I mean, that would be great.
If we could find one, Max.
You know, wasn't too focused on money. But that's what we need to do. We need to push it forward. When we've got these marches and these people there, you need to speak to them, but in the right way. You know, you need to instigate an action, an emotion that is going to move the process forward from that point so you don't just all go home. Now we've got you all here, there's something we can get involved in and then offer them a way and a pathway to do it. That's what we could do with these marches. And if we don't do that, then they don't really achieve anything because all they do is show the government how many people are actually interested, and people get up and march and they speak and they say this rhetoric and they talk about how bad everything is, but they never offer any solutions. And so the government looks at it and goes, okay, everyone's cool. No one's really trying to do anything yet. No one's really got the idea of how they can do it. So it's a good way of gauging where the public consciousness is. That's why the government encourages people to protest if they don't like something, because they can see the numbers and they can hear the speeches and they can see where you're at and what the process is going to be, whether you're going to push anything forward. And nobody ever does. So that's what we need to do, is start pushing it forward, calling things for what they are. You know, what's going on in Israel is a war crime. It's being openly supported by governments. Therefore, you have a duty to withhold your taxes from those governments, and you have a duty to stand up as a people and get rid of these criminals that are running your country, because they're supporting war crimes, they're supporting genocide, they're supporting ethnic cleansing, they're whitewashing over it, and they're using a controlled media to sell it to the public. So call it for what it is and stand up and do something about it.
I think my point I was making, Max, is if we go there and protest... when I say I think we should. I'm not talking about protesting, having speakers. I'm talking about stay.
Yeah, stay. Well, that's what they tried to do with the Occupy movement. But yes, the Occupy movement didn't have any direction. They just thought everything's wrong, but we don't know how to fix it, and we don't know where to go from this point, you know. So you had all these factions come in and try to take over, the socialists and the this and the that, and the media painting it as left and right, Republican, Democrat thing, and, you know, because there was no direction for it. You know, my argument was that you don't need to occupy Wall Street. We already occupy the whole planet. You just need to occupy yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if we know who we are and we stand up and call things for what they are from where we are, we don't have to move. We don't have to go anywhere and occupy anything. We just have to start speaking the truth and calling things for what they are. We can do it from our own homes. You know, so, you know, it's just a matter of perspective. I mean, they had a good idea with Occupy, and yeah, you could do something outside BBC, just lock them in there and not let them leave, but you'll find there'll be truckloads of police arrive, then the media will paint it as all these domestic terrorists, and they'll sell it to all the people who weren't there, and you know the way they do it. They just, you know, if they can get away with Sandy Hook, and they can get away with this whole fake war on terror, if they can get away with 9/11, I mean, you know.
If they can get away with the world wars, Max.
Yeah, you know, they can get it. Yeah, exactly.
That's
can get
away with
what happened in World War II. All of the lies that we've got over that, what they've sold to the public, what World War II really was and what we think it was.
Hmm.
Oh, my God, you know.
It's mind-blowing.
So, yeah, they can get away with a lot of stuff, mate. The media is pretty powerful. So it may take a bit more than that, you know. I think we need what I want to see is a grass fires right around the planet and people all focusing on the root cause of the problem, and making noise about it in every public forum that they can, every TV show they can, every radio show they can, every newspaper, in their local communities, public meetings, everything. Talking about abuse of office. Talking about the politicians abusing the power that they hold by giving themselves powers they don't deserve. Because we need good administrators of infrastructure. That's what we need. We don't need rulers. We need people who are going to run this place in a way that's going to be beneficial for mankind. And these guys are not doing that job. All they're doing is starting wars, and we know they're all fake. It's ridiculous, you know. So
no one wants more.
Well, it's got to take a groundswell, mate. It's got to take a groundswell of the people, and I believe that's what's going to change things, and that's what we're trying to do with Full Circle, is link everybody up together.
Yeah, so let's talk about Full Circle for a little while, Max. A lot of work has gone into that now. I know Matthew Dell I had on the program a few weeks after I started, actually. And he set up a brilliant community connector there.
Yeah, well, the community connector it's absolutely brilliant. You can use this to find people in your local area that you can link up with, and you can form action groups. And with the Full Circle Project, we've got ways that you can manage these action groups. You can start these circles of five, and you can start these action groups in your local community. You can link them up with other action groups. You can link everything together through the website. We'll have a forum there so everyone can compare what actions are being taken. And we'll have a panel where we can offer advice to people, have legal people come on, and maybe people who are involved in action come on and talk to others about what they're doing. But we've got to start linking all of the different activist groups up together, you know, the whaling people, yeah. The fracking people, all the different groups up together, because the problem is that we're all fighting symptoms. You know, we're trying to put band-aids on symptoms. You know, the government puts in austerity measures and creates homeless people. We try to feed and clothe the homeless rather than going for the politician that wrote the legislation which created the homeless crisis. Yeah. That's what we need to do. And we need to start directing our focus in that direction from all of these problems, because all of them are a result of legislation, but ultimately at the top, that's where it comes from. So we've got to start addressing that and start going for the people who hold these positions and link all these different action groups up together. And you imagine when you've got the whole world and all these different action groups, the fracking people, the whaling people, the austerity people, the guys trying to feed the homeless, all the different stuff that's going on, all these different action groups, when they're all focusing their attention directly at the office that created the legislation which created the problem, then you're going to see some pretty scared politicians. And, you know, the media is going to have to get wind of it. There's going to be people lower. You're going to have lower level politicians getting wind of it and starting to call it out on the floor. You're going to shift human consciousness by creating a new meme, something that empowers the people. Speak to them in a language they can understand. That's the key as well, is speaking to these people in a language they can understand. You know, we've tried the conspiratorial approach so much with people, and it hasn't really got anywhere. It's woken up the people who are susceptible to being awakened. But a lot of the ones who aren't, a lot of the ones who are still asleep, who know something's terribly wrong but just don't know what it is and don't want to go down that rabbit hole, you've got to speak to these people in a language they can understand. So we can use elements within the legal system to do that by talking in terms such as abuse of office, loss of confidence, dismissal, all of this sort of stuff, and we can get their attention that way. And once we've got enough people's attention, then we can change things. And even using this approach, I mean, when I start talking about this with people, I see a little spark of enlightenment go off in their minds. They start thinking, yeah, actually, I am powerful. I can make a difference. Yeah. Actually, this is an abuse of office. Actually, governments don't control me. Actually, they're not my rulers. So you see this little spark, this little doorway, which may lead to some sort of conscious evolution for this individual. You see it go off by speaking to them in a language they understand, in a non-threatening language. And that's what we're trying to do with Full Circle Project. Create somebody that can reach the people on the street in a language they can understand and provide for them a mechanism of empowerment and action that they can all get involved in their own community and link it all up globally and just start grass fires. It's a movement without leaders that leads itself by the actions of the people within the movement. So there's no taking this out once it gets started, because there's no leader to take out. You know, you lead yourself. All you got to do is get involved and link up with people and start some sort of an action in your local community. And there's be heaps of support there on the website from all the people around the world who are doing similar things. So you can connect with all of them, see what's working and see what isn't, and what you can adopt and adapt for your own community.
I think it's also important that people realize that there are no leaders, Max, because people are still looking for leaders, are they not?
Well, they are. That's the problem. That's one of the hugest problems that we face, is that people want to be led out of this mess. You know, people want to hear Max Egan came up with an idea that changed it, or this guy did, or that guy did, you know. And it's not going to work. I mean, I can't change anything without the help of the people, without the participation of the people. You know, I don't have all the ideas that are going to bring about a new vision of the future for all of mankind. I only have my own ideas for my own vision. We've got to find a mechanism whereby we can put all of our ideas on the table and respect each other and move it forward and see what we come up with. You know, no one knows what the future looks like, and there's no need to try to construct some sort of a new system and present it to the world. You know, if we were to suddenly respect ourselves and act always according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, exactly, we wouldn't have to change anything. We wouldn't have to reconstruct the system. You know, if we all started doing the right thing and all that we do, then the system would change around us. It would be an organic thing. We wouldn't have to change anything. You know, if everyone had started acting according to moral parameters right now, the whole world would change in a day. You know, we need mechanism. We need infrastructure that we've got here. You know, people depend on infrastructure. They depend on the plumbing working, the water flowing. They depend on supermarket shelves being filled and all this sort of stuff. So we can't just collapse the whole system and bring it down into chaos, because it wouldn't be anarchy, it'd be chaos. It'd be absolutely dreadful. We need to find a way of leading humanity back to a point of safety. saying it's got to come from respect, and it's got to come from us calling things for what they are and speaking to people in a language they can understand. I really believe that, you know, and that's the way we can get it all back, you know.
Yes.
And we don't have to construct a new system if we do that. You know what I'm saying? It'll change around us. It has to. If we suddenly change what we do and how we interact with people, then the system has to change with us.
Well, I've got a little thing going here, Max, with a town council over there trying to sell off our library, which was left to us in a lease, a 999-year lease. And I went to the town council meeting and pointed out that it's ours. It's not yours. The Cornwall Council are just holding the covenant. And the reaction I got, actually one councillor, bless him for coming on, and on a Facebook page we've got called Cornish Politics, actually came on and said, Max, I can't act by a moral compass. They don't understand, even the councillors don't understand. I went down there and I gave them remedy, and they totally ignored me.
Yeah, well, they can't because it's a corporate system, it's a psychopathic system.
And they can't see through it.
Have a compass and operate within the system, and not unless everybody does it.
Hmm.
But I can't do it unless everybody else does. And I'm not prepared to do it because I'm not prepared to go out on a limb and make a stand and do something right, because I might lose my big fat paycheck. That's basically what he was saying to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I can't have a moral compass. What does that say to you? I'm a politician and I can't have a moral compass. Roy, well, you're certainly not suitable for the job, are you?
No. He was honest, though, Max. I'll give him that.
Yeah, honest.
You know, he at least he was prepared to admit that. And I thought, well, there you go. That's the problem. You're not acting by a moral compass. You're acting by, you know, things, as you say many times, things written down on pieces of paper.
Exactly. You know, it's a corporate system. It's a psychopathic system. So you get people who do have a moral compass, but they're forced to operate within psychopathic parameters, so they're not able to exercise their moral compass. We need to change that.
Hmm.
You know, we need to change that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I've got to just pop back, Max, to the before we leave, spoke earlier about the mainstream and the problems we're having with it. The other thing I was going to mention was that I wasn't only talking about going down through to the main studios in the BBC. I was talking about every media outlet across the country, be it especially local, because I believe that somewhere within there are people with conscience. I mean, I'm thinking about my local radio station, you know?
Well, they probably are, but they're constrained by legislation because they think it's real.
Yeah.
You know? And unfortunately, because they've got that little ticket and that little card that says they're a media person, they belong to this association, then they have to abide by those rules because they agreed to. So they signed their freedom away. That's the problem, you know. You could really go deeper into it if they really want to, because obviously the contracts aren't valid. No contract that anybody ever made with government is valid, because there was never certainty of terms. There was never full disclosure.
No.
They never told you what the birth certificate was. They never told you were a corporate chattel. I mean, there's so many ways out of government contracts if you want to go that path, but you'll find that most of them don't, you know. So they just think, well, the paper's real, and if I try to fight it, I'll get some lawyer and I'll get fined or put in jail and I'll lose my ability to be able to speak out, and then they'll write on another piece of paper that I'm not allowed to talk to anybody, and so I won't be able to, because they think it's all real. You know,
yeah.
That's the beauty of being in the alternative media, not signing any contracts with anyone. I have to say what I want to say.
Absolutely. That's what PIR is all about, Max. We say what we want here.
Yeah, exactly. That's why the alternative media has been so effective. And that's why you're not getting any of this out to, you know, on the mainstream, because they're constrained by legislation, which is why people like you and I can't get a radio broadcaster's license, you know. And I can't even get a ham radio in Australia, because I've got to get a broadcaster's license to get a shortwave radio. I mean, how ridiculous is that? So that's the way they curtail the information. You can't just, like Bill Cooper used to do, just get put up a signal and just broadcast every night. You've actually got to get a broadcaster's license now to do that. Because they say if you've got a radio tower, if you've got a transmitting tower, then you're a radio station. And so you need a broadcaster's license. You need to be controlled by all of the government regulations.
One of the big things that's bothering me at the moment, Max, and I know it's something that we're almost afraid to talk to those who are not awake to the problem, is chemtrails. Because I'm finding a lack of energy now. I'm looking at the skies and they're changing. We're getting bubble, like plastic bubble cloud. It's like a mist up there that you can see, which seems so much lower now. But I've been, I, you know, I quit gigging because I just didn't have the energy anymore. And I find myself and people I talk to who are suffering from tiredness all the time. And I believe it's the chemtrails. I think chemtrails have got a lot to do with it. And it's so easy for people to see, but how the hell do you tell them?
Well, it's an interesting thing, geoengineering, because it's right in front of people's faces, but they just don't see it. It's incredible. It's something that's so in your face, and yet it is so disbelieved. It's incredible. The amount of cognitive dissonance involved in geoengineering and aerial spraying is absolutely phenomenal. And I think another thing is that things such as the term chemtrails, we've got to stop calling them chemtrails because it's a loaded term. It's a conspiratorial term.
Yeah.
It's been vilified. But there is actually documents that were tabled by the House of Commons which talk about the British geoengineering program. So there's no denying that this is taking place. There is aerial spraying taking place. It's confirmed by all Western governments. They just call it different names. They laugh at chemtrails, and yet they say, yes, we're carrying out climate remediation programs or geoengineering programs, but we're not spraying chemtrails. Well, it's the same thing.
Mm.
It's just the whole conspiratorial version of it. But, yeah, I think they're a huge problem. And, again, how do we deal with that? We've got to regain control of the governments. You know, every problem we face is because we don't have control of the government. And that's the issue. All the big mysteries that we're trying to find out the answers for years and years, all the hidden information that's locked in the chambers of the Vatican or wherever it is, you know, all of this stuff that we don't have access to, all of the paths we should have trodden but haven't been allowed to, all of this is because we don't have control of the system. We don't have control of our governments because we've never really believed we can do it. We've never really believed that we're anything special. We've always believed we're just little people and that the guys at the top know what they're doing and they manage things for us and they're doing a great job and they're also keeping us safe from all these terrible terrorists out there in the world by putting all of these stringent rules around our society so that nobody can hurt me. And this is kind of what we're programmed to think, and it's all a lie. It's all fiction. And we've got to regain control of this system. We really do. We've got to stop all these wars. And we've got, you know, that's the only way we're going to deal with the chemtrails is by regaining control of the system. You know, we've got to introduce some sort of transparency in government. But again, you're not going to reach the man on the street by telling him about chemtrails. You've got to start having him look at the hardships that he's facing in his life and coming to terms with what is the cause of those hardships and plant that little seed of empowerment within him so that he'll at least turn and look at government. And once we've got enough people's attention, then we can start addressing the situation and addressing what lies behind government and what's causing all of these problems. But we've got to get people's attention first in a language they can understand. That's the thing. And chemtrails, man, I've tried. I did a major feature about geoengineering in my last film, Transformation. I did a very large section on it and the nanotechnology and all the things during the chemtrails, which is a multi platform delivery system. All sorts of things are in chemtrails, depending on what they want to do. You've got barium, strontium, aluminium. They've found desiccated erythrocytes, which are essentially dried red blood cells. In the aerial spraying, we found nanotechnology, found all sorts of stuff. So there's a major program going on to change life on this planet, I think.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We do apologize for the problems we had there. We had some technical glitches. We weren't streaming, but we're back now, Max. I completely lost where we was. Go to thecrowhouse.com for all of Max's work, and I'm sure he'll be uploading this podcast very shortly. So our apologies for breakdown there. It's completely out of our hands. How are things happening in Australia with the carbon tax and the bikie laws? Did they go through, the carbon tax especially?
Yeah, well, the carbon tax, all that's gone through, and the bikie laws and all that sort of thing. You might have, I don't know what he's actually doing with the carbon tax at the moment, but I mean, Australia's really gone down the tube in so many ways. The whole no jab, no pay thing that they've got going on there at the moment with vaccinations.
Oh, like, my God.
Forcing people basically to vaccinate their children or not receive any payments from the government, not receive any welfare services or anything like that. I mean, there's so many things that Tony Abbott's doing. He's sold the whole country out. He really has. He's a disgraceful politician, absolute sociopath. So, I mean, the carbon tax and the bikie laws are just the tip of the iceberg from what this guy's done. And, you know, we knew he was going to do this. I mean, he's the worst man for the job. But in many ways, he's woken a lot of people up. He's woken a lot of Australians up to the fact that something's terribly wrong. And so that's a good thing. But, I mean, it's a mess over there at the moment. It's an absolute mess. I don't know how we're ever going to recover from Tony Abbott, really.
Well, it seems they're lining them up. They're all just get worse and worse, everyone that comes along. And people are just seem to be quite happy to take it.
Well, I don't know if they're happy to take it, but they certainly do seem to be getting worse. I mean, yeah, it's amazing that the thing that's really given Tony Abbott his popularity back is the whole Lindt Cafe shooting thing, the whole anti-terrorist stance. It's this really hard line that he seems to be taking. Although I think it's just the media that's saying he's really popular and telling everybody why we need him so much, because everybody I speak to seems to hate him intensely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's militarized our police. He's changed the police uniforms. They all look like, Gestapo now. They're all in black uniforms with Kevlar, and they look like American stormtroopers. So, you know, this is happening globally as well. And I saw that in England as well. I saw, when I was there a few months ago, I saw you guys have got these police there in black uniforms with machine guns and stuff standing around in parks and stuff, which wasn't like that last time I was there. So, It's happening everywhere, really. I mean, what Abbott's doing, they just bring in these little bits of legislation. They try it out, see how it works, and then they do it in another country. But they test a lot of it in Australia. Australia's a very controlled population, very small population. They've kept it small for a reason, and they've disarmed them for a reason, and they're trying all sorts of social programming on them for a reason to see how it all works so they can extrapolate it out over the rest of the world.
Absolutely. They seem to be one as bad as the other to me, Max. But one thing you did mention in your show, which blew me away on last weekend's show, you quickly threw in Jim Humble and MMS. And I've gone and done a little bit of research, and it's absolutely incredible.
Well, it is. It's amazing. And the people that I'm staying with here in Peru actually one guy is part of the Genesis Church. See, that's how they've got away with all the laws surrounding MMS. They've just created a church. So now it's part of their holy sacrament. And you can't condemn anybody for their religious beliefs. So they're using the law against itself. So there's an organization called the Genesis 2 Church. And the people that I'm staying with, there's actually three ministers of that church on this property.
Oh, right.
Who serve MMS to certain people. And it helps them and cures them of all sorts of things. Like, there was a lady who had, I can't remember what was wrong with her, but her head was swollen. Literally her head, it was like 2 inches bigger than it should have been.
Yeah.
And they went and gave her some, she'd been to the doctor, they did all sorts of stuff. She said she's going to have to go in for surgery and all this sort of stuff. They went and gave her some MMS 2 solution, and this, her head reduced the swelling in a matter of hours. Like four hours later, her head had gone down. And they've got people that have got all sorts of ailments upriver in the Amazon, and they're going up. These are villages, you know, little Shipibo villages. They're going up and finding these villages where people have got these problems. They're treating it with MMS, and they're documenting it, and they're getting incredible results, and they're healing everybody that this stuff touches. And this stuff, it doesn't actually heal you. What it does is it oxygenates your blood and allows your own immune system to work properly. And that's what's healing people. They're actually healing themselves. It's the MMS just oxygenates their blood. So, of course, it's banned. It's said that it's a dangerous substance and it's people drinking bleach and all sorts of stuff like that. It's very close in its cellular structure to bleach, and it smells like bleach. And I wouldn't recommend you drink a lot of it. You get very sick. But in small doses, with the right, treated in the right way, it is curing almost everything. Well, it's allowing your body to cure almost everything. And it's brilliant stuff, and I recommend that people go and look it up.
It's very simple to make as well, Max.
Well, it is.
And it's, MMS stands for Miracle Medical Solution, I believe.
A miracle mineral supplement, I think it's called.
Okay, there seems to be a bit of...
Well, something like that.
Yeah, there's a few different versions, but they all mean the same thing. But I did go and look, and you just need a coffee maker and some sodium chloride.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing, and it works. And they're of course, not promoting it. They're banning it because it will wipe out the pharmaceutical industry. Between MMS and cannabis... we can cure just about everything. saying that was here, there's a man who was addicted to Oxycontin who came to a retreat here. He didn't tell anybody that he was on Oxycontin. You're not supposed to come to the retreat if you're on any type of drugs.
Right.
But he was. And Oxycontin is an opium-based drug that he was put on by his doctors for back pain. They put him on Oxycontin, which is virtually like being addicted to heroin. It's the same thing.
Sure.
I mean, I can't believe what these Western doctors do to people. You know, that's what they did to this guy because he had back pain. Suddenly he's addicted to this opium-based drug, and he ran out of his supply while he was here, and he went started sort of going cold turkey, like heroin withdrawals, and we treated him with cannabis oil. And he was on a bed for 4 days, and he went through the whole process and thought that he'd been on the bed for 4 hours. And came out of it completely clean using cannabis oil. We just cured an Oxycontin addiction using cannabis oil.
What is Oxy?
Well, Oxycontin is a painkiller that is opium based. It's very like it's a medical prescribed drug.
Yes, it cured his addiction.
And it's a very, very serious addiction, the same as heroin addiction, because it's an opium-based medication.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it gave this guy Oxycontin for back pain. Apparently they're prescribing it like candy. They're just handing it out to everybody in the States. So you've got all these people with these opium-based addictions. And it's disgraceful what these doctors are doing. But we cured that with cannabis oil.
Yeah.
And he was drinking MMS. He had some scratches on his leg that he was scratching because he was going through all this pain. We sprayed MMS on that, and it cured all his scratches on his leg. Healed him up right away. The cannabis oil got him through the withdrawal stage of the Oxycontin, and he left here a clean, healthy person. So this is what you can do with natural plant remedies.
Mm. That's incredible. So we're not saying goodbye to hemp oil then, Max?
Oh, definitely not.
No.
Definitely not. Hemp oil is an amazing cure-all. It cures all my... I haven't found anything I won't have an effect on yet.
Okay.
So I don't know what it won't cure. But the interesting thing about cannabis oil, the interesting thing about cannabis itself, is that it's our companion plant. I keep saying this, it's our companion plant, because the reason I say this is because we have an endocannabinoid system in our body. Every organ in our body has endocannabinoid receptors. So we have obviously grown through our evolution, whatever you want to call it, with a strong symbiotic relationship with this plant. Otherwise we wouldn't have a cannabinoid system in our body. We don't have an endocarotene system or an endolettuce system or an endorhubarb system, but we have an endocannabinoid system. So obviously we've had a very, very long symbiotic relationship with this plant. And when they outlawed this plant, everybody started getting sick. We started getting cancer came on the rise. We started getting leukemias, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all these exotic diseases that we'd never heard of started coming onto the scene as soon as they banned cannabis. And I think this plant is the banning of this plant constitutes a crime against humanity. And any politician who supports the continued prohibition of cannabis is committing crimes against humanity and should be removed from office. It isn't a dangerous drug. It's killed nobody in its over 10,000 years of recorded use. And we've trashed the planet because we've stopped using this plant for all of the things we can get from it, the best quality materials, best quality papers, medicines, plastics, building materials, fibers so we can build houses, concrete, all sorts of stuff we can get from this plant. And all of these are very, very pollutive industries that are trashing this planet. And also cannabis seeds are the only whole food on the planet you can live on entirely, just on cannabis seeds. They contain everything you need to live a perfectly healthy life. So, this plant, and also it improves the soil you grow it in. You can find some place that's got bad soil, go and grow 3 years of cannabis there, and the soil will be great. You can grow anything there from that point. So, there's no reason for this plant to be outlawed, and in fact, it's a crime that this plant is outlawed. So, I've cured all sorts of things with it. Just with the oil alone, I've cured leukemias, I've cured cancers, I've cured skin cancer, I've cured Lyme's disease, I've helped autistic children with it. I've had an amazing amount of success using this plant. And so people need to be aware of that as well. Cannabis and MMS, we could get rid of most of the world's health issues.
What staggered me about MMS, Max, was Alzheimer's and dementia, that we can actually bring people back.
Yeah, well, they don't want that, do they?
No, but there's an actual testimonial on Jim Humble's site where a guy was suffering from, I don't know if it's Alzheimer's or dementia, but his memory started improving within 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's incredible. I never slept Sunday night. I couldn't get to sleep for thinking about it. It was one of those, another one of those Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told moments, you know. It was so shocking to think that something so simple is out there that could bring people back from Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. And they won't allow people to use it. They say it's bad for you. You know, it's a dangerous substance. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, they're just supporting big pharma is all they're doing. Another thing you should look up is Royal Raymond Rife, if you haven't heard of him. Here comes a plane flying over. I hope it's not too much of a disturbance. Have you ever heard of Royal Rife?
No, Max.
Royal Raymond Rife was a man who invented a microscope, which will blow your mind when you see a picture of it. If you just Google an image of Royal Raymond Rife or the Rife microscope, this was a microscope which could look at viruses in real time. Now, we can photograph viruses at the moment with electron microscopes, but we can't watch them in real time. He could actually get a blood sample and put it under this microscope, and he could watch the virus in real time and view the actual virus moving through the blood.
How long has it been out there?
And he would, then what he would do, he would to put the light, the slide, through different frequencies of light. So the virus became illuminated because under a different frequency of light, certain things are illuminated under different frequencies. You understand? So you get to a certain frequency of light, and that virus would become the brightest particle in the slide. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it would become illuminated. So then he would find the sound frequency that corresponded with that light frequency, and he would bombard the virus with sound waves that correspond to that light frequency, and the virus would shatter like a crystal glass. And they had a big dinner around about 1936 or 1937 to celebrate the end of all disease, because Royal Raymond Rife's microscope could pinpoint and locate any disease or virus with the light frequencies he could subject it to. You could locate the frequency of that virus, and then you could bombard it with the corresponding sound wave, and you would be cured. And he cured everything he came in contact with, and he died in jail. So have a look at that man, and that was back in the 1930s, where they actually cured all disease using sound and light waves. Think about that one.
It's incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is not a fiction.
No.
That is not fiction. That is well documented.
This is before we were both born, Matt.
Yeah. Royal Raymond Rife, and his microscope is a work of art. I mean, he was in a unique position that he was a doctor and a chemist, and he was also an engineer. So he made his own microscope. You know, so it was an incredible feat, and you can see a picture of it. It's the most incredible device you've ever seen.
Royal Raymond, Royal, R-O-Y-A-L. Yep.
Royal Rife, R-I-F-E.
Yep, got
Royal,
it.
If you just Google the Rife microscope on Google Images, and you'll see a picture of this thing, which he built back in the 30s, which could actually view live viruses. And that's better than an electron microscope can do today. So why aren't they using this microscope? Why aren't they building them now? Why aren't they curing diseases with sound and light frequency the way they can, the way they proved they could in the 1930s? And why is there a paper that came out? You'll actually find a link on my website. If you go to the recent headlines on the Crow House, there's an article there, Did You Know About the Cancer Act of 1939, where it was actually made illegal to talk about the fact that cancer was curable by natural remedies. It became illegal to say that cancer could be cured because there had not been a cure found for it, a synthetic cure found for it that could be patented, and no money could be made from any of those cures. So they made it illegal to tell people that cancer is very, very curable. So it still stands as the big incurable disease when it is nothing of the sort. It is very curable, as are all diseases, in methods that they just don't want to tell you about.
Oh, I'm bloody mind blown again now, Max. I'm struggling with the MMS now. I've got another one to look at. It's all these cures that are out there.
The Cancer Act of 1939, and just Google the life of Royal Raymond Rife and see what this guy had to offer us, and you will be shocked.
I don't think I'll ever be stopped from being shocked, Max. Not over the last 3 years. Every time you think you finish being shocked, along comes another one. You know, this MMS has just blown me away, and I'll have a look at that one as well. So what about the men and women of this world, Max, the fashion and the fluffy men that we produce now? It's all a part of the plan, isn't it?
Well, it is. You know, there's been a huge effort to squash the divine feminine in the last few hundred years. They've done a really good job of that. And then there was a huge effort to bring it back. But it was all very, very contrived. And the way they brought the divine feminine back was enslave her to the workforce and convince all the men to get in touch with the inner feminine inside them and become these fluffy little men who won't fight back. Mm-hmm. And you find, you know, that even through the television and the media, you know, the men are always portrayed as quite dumb on television shows. It's always the women who run the house and are very smart and all this sort of stuff. So this has resulted in squashing the divine masculine and basically masculinizing the women under the pretext of, you know, bringing back the divine feminine. What they've done, you know, women have lost in touch with their mother instinct and their femininity to a large degree within Western society. I mean, I'm generalizing here. Of course, not all women are like this, but yeah. If you've got to succeed in the business world, you certainly can't be a mother. You know, I mean, there's nothing motherly about people like, you know, Madeleine Albright and Maggie Thatcher and you know, Julia Gillard and some of the things these people have done to the world. Hmm. This isn't exactly nurturing. So they remove that nurturing spirit from women by giving them a false vision of what success is and what it is to be an empowered female. You know, what it is to be an empowered female isn't to be a good business executive, it's to be a good mother and a good teacher and someone who can help guide the family and help guide your offspring and help guide your partner and be a support for each other, you know. This is what it's all about, and what being a man should really be about is protecting that and protecting your family and helping your wife and your children excel at all that they can do and helping put food on the table and provide and support for them and protect them, you know. But we've lost all of that through this whole squashing of the divine feminine, the reinvention of it, and the reinvention of what it is to be a man as well. You know, you've got to be in touch with your feminine. You've got to be this and that. You know, when the whole patriarchal society is what created all the domestic violence and all the rubbish that women had to go through anyway. Yeah. You know, both women and men have been brutalized by this system. We really have. And it's been a homogenization of the genders, really. You know, we're turning the men into women and the women into men. And we're trying to come up with something in between. That seems to be the plan, you know? And it's pretty ridiculous, you know.
I see the story on the mainstream news, pretty much top of the hour. A little girl ran out of her front gate, and a guy was riding his push bike on the pavement, and he knocked her over, and she got caught up and dragged for a few feet, you know, and she ended up with a little bit of just brazed her face a little bit. And this is headline news that this guy went to court and everything like that, you know. I mean, I got knocked over when I was 7 years old by a push bike, flattened me on my way to school. I went home and I went to school in the afternoon. They're now saying that this girl is suffering from psychological problems.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on there, Max?
I got hit by a car when I was 7 years old riding my push bike to school. Completely ruined my push bike. If I didn't end up with psychological problems, no. I could sue the driver or anything.
But this is what they're pushing.
Yeah, of course.
Outrageous. Outrageous. Max, I know we've had some technical problems. I do apologize for that. I hope that anyone who hasn't caught all of the tonight's show can listen to it again on the Crow House. Where there's just fantastic stuff there. I have to mention Deprogram the Collective, Max, because you mention a lot about your films, which are absolutely fabulous. But Deprogram the Collective, if anyone's not seen that, please go and watch it. It changed my life because it opened the doors to an understanding of the Middle East, and which took me down Max, you sent me down to look at the war, which is where I've been studying for the last 12 months. I've been looking at the wars from, well, right back from where you stated the creation of Palestine. It's just a wonderful piece of work. I've got to commend you on that.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting story, and thanks for promoting that. That was a talk that I gave in Brisbane in 2013, I believe.
Yeah.
And I put a lot in that. It was a lot of ground to cover. I mean, it was the elevator version of a lot of that as well. There's so much involved in the whole Palestinian situation in World War I and World War II. There's actually a great book by a guy called Mike King, who you might want to contact, Graham. He'd be a great guest for your show, MS King. Tell him that I sent you.
Thank you.
I haven't spoken to him, but he's written a wonderful book called The Bad War. which I recommend everybody look at if you can get a hold of it. And it goes through the whole timeline from 1848 up until the end of World War II. And it puts all the dominoes in place and shows you where all the pieces were and how the whole plot was laid. And it's a very, very well thought out book. It's a very, very well presented. There's a lot of pictures to show you and illustrate what he's talking about. And it's all based on facts. It's all based on mainstream news articles and stuff. So you can research it all, find out this is actually what was being reported. And when you put all the dots together, this is what you come up with. And it's a real eye-opener. So I recommend people look that. If they want to understand the world today, they need to understand how we got here. And World War I, World War II, and the whole creation of Israel is a big part of it. The creation of Israel and the whole Holocaust and all the stories we were told about World War II is what is the backbone of the current control grid. And people need to find out the truth about what really happened.
Mm. I believe Ilan Pappe, who you mentioned in the speech as well, Max, I've just come found out, I think he's working in Falmouth.
Okay.
So maybe he could be another interesting guest as well. But
he's an amazing writer, mate. Ilan Pappe's done some wonderful work to expose what's been going on in Palestine and what happened when they went down there in 1947. Wonderful book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. I recommend people get another good book is The Transfer Agreement by Edwin Black, which talks about the Nazi deal that was made, how a whole bunch of German Jews were shipped down to Palestine and given $100 million by Adolf Hitler's government in 1933. There's a lot of things that people don't understand about what happened in World War II, camps were all about. There's so much that people don't know. Most of people's knowledge of World War II comes from the television. It comes from movies or documentaries that they've watched, which have all been created by controlling interests who fed you a lie. And there's a lot more to it. And when you really start looking into it, this is a very, very deep rabbit hole.
I should not think so. My God, I can't believe what I found out on the gas chambers. You know, I mean, it's just a bloody joke. How can you take 450,000 people across Europe from Hungary and exterminate them and get rid of the bodies in 3 weeks? I mean, it's not possible.
They would have to be killing and burning 2,000 people a day from the beginning of World War II until the end of World War II.
That's correct, which is impossible.
It's impossible, yeah.
And there's no coke. There's no piles of coke.
No, there isn't evidence there for a lot of what they say. There is evidence there, however, for some very, very extremely bad death camps that were actually set up by Eisenhower, where 1.5 million Germans were killed in the most terrible of conditions. They were basically starved to death and left to die of exposure.
Yeah.
They were locked into a big containment area, and they were given no shelter, no food, no water, no bedding, no tents, and just left there. And that's just the tip of the iceberg as well, the bombing of Dresden. There's so much stuff that people need to look at in World War II. And to understand World War II, like I said earlier, you've really got to start in 1848 because World War I and World War II were basically the same war.
Yeah.
Just a big lull in the middle, but it was basically the same thing, and it was set up by controlling interests, by Zionist interests, as far back as 1848. If you really want to go back further than that, you could go back to another 200 years to the French Revolution. If you want to see the groundwork for World War I and World War II and the theft of Palestine, that's where it all actually started. So it's a big rabbit hole. But I recommend people start with that book by Mike King called The Bad War. The Bad War by M.S. King. I have no problem recommending this man's book. It's a wonderful book. He's actually someone I've been intending to get onto the show to discuss the book. Another guy is Nick Kolstrom. You should get on. He's written a book called I think it's called Breaking the Spell, which is his research on the Holocaust.
And I've just seen would you believe, Max? I've just seen a news story come out a couple of days ago that there is much worse than 6 million now, according to some Zionist that I forget his name off the top of my head. That there wasn't 6 million; it's actually 30 or 40 million Jews were killed in the Second World War. Which is a bit of a problem when you consider there's only 50 million in the world.
Yeah. And there were documented accounts of there being 4.5 million Jews in Europe just before World War II. And there was a newspaper article mentioning how they were very concerned about the 600,000 Jews of Germany in 1933. So how that figure became 6 million by the end of the war. And out of that 4.5 million of Europe, then 6 million died in the Holocaust. And out of that 4.5 million and the 6 million who died in the Holocaust, there's 5.5 million now receiving payments from Germany as Holocaust survivors. I can't figure out how all this math works, but I have questions.
Just a little. My math isn't very good, but if there was 4.1 million killed, exterminated at Auschwitz, they then changed the figure to 1.4, but the 6 million stays the same.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot that doesn't add up. Apart from the fact that the figure was also used in 1914, 1916, 1921, the figure was actually used 254 times in the papers between 1900 and 1945. So this 6 million figure has been bandied around a lot, and I suggest people look into it for themselves, because I have issues with it. And everything that Israel is doing to Palestine and its tentacles and its hold that it has upon the world is all based on the concept of the Holocaust being real. And another rabbit hole that you could go down if you really wanted to is the concept of nuclear weapons being real, which I also question. But I really don't have time to go into that one at the moment. I'll just leave that with you.
Wow. That's quite a thing to leave me dangling on, Max.
Sorry about that, Graham.
Wow, that's just incredible. The other
look at the people involved in the whole nuclear program, Oppenheimer. Look at the Oppenheimers. The Oppenheimers are part of the banking elite, for God's sake. Have a look at the old nuclear test footage videos. They didn't look fake back then, but have a look at them now. And, I question nuclear weapons. I mean, I don't know.
So that would put paid to the Samson project then, Max?
Well, you know, the whole Samson option, the whole concept that they're holding the world to ransom with all these nuclear warheads. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still, Nagasaki and Hiroshima are interesting, and maybe they happened the way we're told. I haven't done enough research into that. It may be hard to cover up the fact that if they were just firebombed, that may be a hard one to cover, because you'd need a lot of planes to do it. Maybe it was done with one bomb. I don't know, but, it seems interesting that all this threat of nuclear war that we've had for the last 60 years, we've never seen a nuclear war, we've never seen another atomic bomb go off anywhere, which in all these countries that have threatened to have them, which has given them all sorts of political power, and I don't know, I just question the whole thing. I question everything I'm told these days, Graham, I really do. I just don't believe a damn thing the media tells me. I don't believe a word the government says. I can't help it. So I have to question everything.
Yeah. I totally agree. I spoke to a guy. I went to see David Irving a few weeks ago, the great British historian who's dedicated his life to studying Adolf Hitler. And there was a room full of very pleasant guys, very interested in the subject. And afterwards I was speaking to them, and he said, we're all from the BNP. Now, if you mention the BNP, the British National Party, the first thing you think of is fascists. These guys were genuine, Max. They were genuinely caring about their country and a better world for their children. And these guys
paints them as fascists. If you want to see a fascist government, go and have a look at the Cameron regime. Yeah. Look what he's doing to your country. That's fascism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Telling you can't have free speech? What's that? Telling you that, anybody who speaks out against the government is as dangerous as ISIS? If you question my actions, you're a terrorist. What is that? That's fascism with a capital F.
Yeah.
Go, David, you're a fascist little terrorist, and the world needs to stand up and call it for what it is. Same as Obama, same as Tony Abbott, same as all these criminals.
Yeah.
Fascist little terrorists inflicting war upon the world and financial slavery upon their citizens. That's all they bloody do.
Absolutely. Max, I know you've got to go shortly. I'd just like to ask you one final question, and that is, you did mention in the past, and you've said it often, that you consider that if we don't act quickly, then Gaza will no longer exist because it will be too polluted. Are we running out of time there?
Well, we are, you know, with what they did in the last incursion. I mean, I've often said that in its current conditions, in 10 to 15 years, Gaza won't be there because it will be too polluted for anyone to live there. There'll just be too much disease. At the moment, since the last incursion, you could probably put that down to 5 years, 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And the population in Gaza, like I said, the average age of the people in Gaza is 17. That is the average age of the population. You've got 1.8 million people, and the average age is 17.
That's frightening.
Think about that. Think about that. There are so many children in Gaza Strip, so many people under the age of 18. It's ridiculous, you know. they simply don't have the knowledge or the education to be able to rebuild this place and fix it up without the help from the outside. We've got to open this place up. We've got to open the borders. Israel can't keep saying it's waging war against this. You can't have a war against children. You need two armies to have a war. It's ridiculous what they're doing. And yes, if we don't pay attention to this, it will not last. It simply will not last. I mean, I was there in 2012, and it's 100 times worse now than what it was when I was there. I'm hopefully going to be going back there in September. It wasn't going to be August, but it's too expensive. So I've got a ticket it's been sitting there for a year, this ticket that I've had open to get back to Gaza. So I've got to use it this year, and I'm going to go back there in September, and I'm just going to go. If the bloody border isn't open, I'm going to go and sit there and wait. I'm going to get into Gaza. I'm going in September, and I'm going to be in there, and I'm going to document what's going on in there. I'm going to bring it out and show people, because we've got to fix this. We really do. Mm. These people are the last piece of real resistance on this planet against this mechanism. People used to say to me, oh, Gaza, that's that place that Israel occupies. And I say, no, Gaza's the only place that Israel doesn't occupy.
Exactly.
And that's why we need to save it. Because if we don't save Palestine, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. This is what they have planned. Mm. And this is what they're just discarding everybody. And we have to pay attention to it. And thousands upon thousands of Palestinians have died, and they're all innocent. They're not terrorists. And they're dying hoping that the world is going to pay attention to them. It isn't that they even want this piece of land so much. They just want to live. They just want to be able to live in dignity the way everybody else is able to live. And they're not able to do so. They're locked in a prison. And they're subject to brutal torture and apartheid, even more brutal apartheid than ever existed in South Africa. This is Palestine of the modern day, and it's all supported by our government, so we need to pay attention to it.
I think people forget about that, Max, that it's apartheid there. They're not even aware that there's apartheid going on in the West Bank especially.
Well, it's worse. It's even worse than apartheid.
Yeah.
It's far worse than what it was in South Africa, you know, and that's something that people need to pay attention to, you know.
Well, if you want to get in there, Max, you said you were going to do a film, and you would be interested in me helping a little bit with the soundtrack, which is a very great honor. But I would recommend that you do it live on air now, Max, because I am the Black Bloody Widower. So fire me, and then you'll get in there.
It's all good, mate. It's all good. I still get to do a soundtrack.
Yeah, but if you fire me now, Max, I'm guarantee you'll get in there. As long as I'm hanging on your back, it won't happen, brother.
Don't give me that stuff. I'm not going there.
Max, it's been fantastic to talk to you again.
Absolute pleasure, Graham.
It was wonderful to have you in Cornwall. And I know it was a tough time when you were here as well, because the 50-day war had just finished, and things were very difficult in that time. But to speak to you now, and it's just for everyone to hear you, they absolutely love you here in the chat room, and they love you all over the world, Max. And we are so appreciative of all the wonderful work you do, and God bless you.
Well, thank you, brother. Thank you for the kind words, and I'll be happy to come on again sometime.
Well, it's our pleasure.
I'm going now, brother.
Take care, Max. Max Egan, thank you so much.
My pleasure.